Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. It's episode number 132. I feel like there's going to be a lot of conversation, rightfully so, about the rain, about the TTC, and about my inability to make a cup of coffee. Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm good, Matt. I was determined, and I hope I stick to it,
yeah,
not to take this out on you.
Well, I put up a poll question. Who's Bob going to be angrier at today, me or the TTC?
You didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
You didn't do anything wrong. So it can't be at you.
But I mean,
one can always find reasons to be mad at someone, but I'm not going to do that. But it took me an hour and 40 minutes to go door to door to your place. And I live at Queen and Lansdowne, and you live at Queen and Parliament, more or less.
More or less.
Just so what we're talking about is the, like, let's say 90% of that trip was consumed by a TTC ride that was one of the slowest I've ever taken. One of the slowest, and you and I have complained about the 501 on this
pod
many times.
Yeah.
But in the rain, with all the construction and some kind of delay, because there were three behind the one that I got on.
So you were on the tip of the spear.
Yeah.
That's the worst one, because you're going, why is there no streetcar? And as you're wondering, there becomes more and more people around you, so that by the time you get on it, it's already packed. And where you live, it's not like you're... In the, like, where you get on streetcars, it shouldn't be that crowded.
No, because I'm sort of out of the high density area.
Yes. Yeah.
It starts really around on Ossington in earnest when you're going from west to east.
Yeah.
So at Lansdowne, there's usually a few people on, but not a ton. So you know when it's standing room only at Jameson, you're cooked.
Oh.
So anyway, and then it was rainy and everybody's miserable and there's nowhere to stand and, you know, whatever. It is what it is.
Yeah.
But I will say,
do it.
No, I asked you to make me a coffee.
Yeah.
You know, which I thought was like, you don't drink coffee.
And not
so
really,
you probably have some instant in your, for friends.
Yeah, I have some instant.
Company, right?
Yeah.
But how often do you make coffee?
Oh, like, I don't know, a couple times
a year?
A year? Yeah,
right.
Maybe five times a year.
Okay. So this, I really want to make sure this is clear. It's not a shot against you. I actually think it would be fun for you to taste the coffee you made.
Okay. I'm going
to. Okay. So Matt's raising it to his lips. And he drinking some?
Oh, that is strong.
Oh, no. It is so strong. Honestly, it is so strong.
You know what it is?
6 pounds of coffee and a teaspoon of water?
Ooh, that is the overcompensating. Because you were like, I need coffee. So I'm like, Bob needs coffee. So then I'm like, I'm going to give him coffee. So I just spooned a ton in. And
so the Francis Mackowitz theory of heating food. The hotter it is, the more love there is in it.
Yeah.
So she'll serve my dinner back when I was a kid, my mom. And it would be so hot, you'd have to wait 10 minutes for it to cool down.
Mm-hmm.
But it proved she loved you.
She loved you. You know, I'm going
to do something. Lukewarm food.
What I'm going to do as a child.
Bad mom.
I'm doing a child thing right now, Bob.
What's that?
I'm adding hot chocolate mix.
Really? Are you going to drink that?
To the coffee. I'm going to see if I can jimmy it up and turn something.
Well, go for it. By the way, this is a mailbag edition, so we've already started phoning it in before we've started.
Yeah, the mailbag ones. Actually, I got something really clever, but we need to go with one more thing with our text exchange this morning.
Okay.
I looked at it through the prism of, because I didn't realize how bad it was.
Right. Well, it's not that bad.
No,
it's not
no,
a tragedy. It was just a pain in the ass.
But, you know, when you said, I'm going to be a little bit late, and I wrote, I'm like, hey, Bob, don't worry. I'm pretty prepped for my show because I'm on now 3 hours. And in the summer, as you know, you got to work harder in the summer than you do in November. So it's like, oh, usually I like to try to be in the office around 11. I'm like, hey, Bob, don't worry about it. I prepped. And your response, I'm not worried about you, Matt. And then, you know, you...
And then I wrote, I'm irritated that it's going to take me 90 minutes to get to your place.
And it was at that point. And then my response was, Bob, I don't think you understand. I'll be fine. You don't need to worry about me.
Right, you know, you started matting it up real quick.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, it was some causerific responses. That's always a pet peeve of mine. Whenever, like, something goes wrong on my end and the other person says, no worries.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not worried about you because I'm dealing with something here.
Yeah.
Like, if I inconvenience you because you have to wait 5 or 10 extra minutes, I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, why would I care? I just explained to you that there's a shitstorm on my end. Why would I care about your 6 minutes?
Yeah. Nope, that didn't work.
No, eh?
The hot
Matt tried drinking it, and he looked like a kid who got force-fed Brussels sprouts.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well,
you know what? Live and learn.
You know what? I've learned. Four tablespoons of coffee crystals isn't good for a small mug. Right?
Okay, so what we did for today's pod was solicit mailbag questions, which we usually do from you, the audience. Thank you very much, everybody who contributed. And also, we decided to text some of our famous, more successful friends and see if they had questions they wanted to answer. Us to answer for them. So we did that too. Before we get to the mailbag questions, though, Matt, do you have any sports stuff that you want to talk about today? Okay,
I do.
Because I have none. So what do you have?
Good. I'm glad you have none, because it means you don't want to talk about Mitch Marner, which I've now banned it. I've banned it on my show.
Nice.
I will not talk about Mitch Marner until there's something to talk
about.
You're
not going to do the update that there's no update?
No. No, it's just nothing.
Right.
Just nothing. I want to talk about Andrew Wiggins.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Is he the most disappointing Canadian athlete since Ben Johnson?
Okay, so let's take this in order. He's not the worst.
No. He's not the worst.
So, no, I'm just sort of going through the math here. So, like an Anthony Bennett who flamed out.
Do you remember when Anthony...
He's got another shot. Who's it with? Is it the Wizards? It's somebody.
No, I think it's the Mavs? Clippers or whatever. It's a team. But here's the thing about Bennett. When he got drafted, do you remember what Bill Simmons did? He was shocked. Mm-hmm. He actually, when David Stern, because I looked this up because I'm going to use the sound today. When David Stern said, Anthony Bennett, the first noise you hear afterwards is Bill Simmons, who's doing a live broadcast, going, whoa. Like,
right.
When he got drafted number one, that was a shock and a fluke. Now, he's a far worse player.
He felt like a lottery pick, but certainly not a number one. And if he'd been drafted 14th overall, he would just feel like a low lottery pick that didn't work out.
Yeah.
Which happens every year.
Every year.
Every year.
It's a hard question.
Ginny Bouchard is disappointing, but only in the sense that we thought she might be dominant. And I don't think it's really her fault, because she got injured at the U.S. Open. Remember, she slipped. She had the concussion issue.
She also made a finals and two semifinals. Finals in Wimbledon and semifinals in Aussie and French. So at least she does have some sort of accomplishment under her belt.
People want to see her as a disappointment, I think, but I think they're just forcing their expectations of her onto her career, which is kind of the Anna Kournikova thing. People are always like, well, she's not really a great tennis player. Well, she is. She's just not Steffi Graf.
Yeah. And there might be a better answer. And I throw this out there because he's not invited, or he's not going to attend Canada's national team training camp. RJ Barrett's going to be there. Tristan Thompson's going to be there. Jamal Murray is going to be there. Andrew Wiggins wasn't included among the list. And from what we hear, Wiggins, you know...
That's not because of talent, though.
No.
That's because he clearly doesn't want to belong to the program.
He says it's not right. Like, the time isn't right now.
I think he just likes to be rich and have fun.
Yeah.
Like, that. I don't know the guy, but by all accounts, he's not a gym rat.
That's a good way of putting it. And none of this is personal against him. But I just started thinking about it because, once again, a chance to go and play for your Canadian team. And all these other guys, like, and guys at different stages of their career. A rookie, a guy who's about to be a star. And then Tristan Thompson, who's won a championship. And, you know, I mean, he's sort of an established player. But you look at, like, every stat about his efficiency, and they're all horrible. And you look at Jimmy Butler. Like, one of the reasons why I didn't want to stay there is, like, I don't want to play with this kid. And it's not all on his fault that the team's been horrible. It's never, you can't blame one person. But in basketball, you're the number one overall pick.
No, you can't blame him. Because he's the number one overall pick. He was a consensus number one overall pick. He was the most highly recruited player going into Kansas that year in the NCAA. So the talent is there. It's been there all along. But everybody has said, does he desire to win at the highest level? Because everybody's good at that level.
Yeah.
Like, he may be better than most of the league. He probably is in terms of just pure skills. But at a certain point, if you don't want it and you're not ready to push for it, the guys who are lesser than you will overtake you. And that is clearly what's happened. Because his numbers aren't bad. They're not bad numbers.
Well, they are, they're not.
They're okay.
Here's how they're good.
They're NBA player numbers.
They're NBA. They are. Here's the good counter.
Okay.
Is that since he's entered the league, I think only 11 players have scored more points than Andrew Wiggins.
Really?
Yeah.
Get out of here.
But there's a reason for that.
Is this a Sharif Abdul-Rahim thing?
It's a Sharif Abdul-Rahim thing. The best thing, one of the best things you can say about him, he doesn't get hurt. he never, ever gets hurt. Like, he plays between 78 and 82 games. So he's played every game. And a lot of our empty calorie points, because his team is never winning, someone has got to score.
And but he's never doing anything that demanding.
No.
So I'd be curious to track him versus John Wall, who trots more without the ball.
Now let's go defense.
Okay.
And again, just this was something I'm going to use on the show today, because again, it's the summer.
Sure.
I'm doing that in video game.
Are you trying to find something to be angry about?
Of those who have defended at least 2,500 shots over the past three seasons, no wing player has surrendered a higher effective field goal rate than Wiggins at 54%. It's a fancy stat, and you don't have to go into all the stats.
It's a pretty great stat, though.
But it means he's bad. On the other end, offensively, he's had his worst year shooting. Just shooting, not true shooting or anything else. Just he's shooting 41%.
From the field?
41% from the field. He's in his fifth year. Aren't you supposed to be getting better? So not only is he a bad defender, not only has he never averaged even five rebounds in a season, he's never even averaged over 2.5 assists. He can't defend, and he's a really inefficient player.
Okay, so I want to go back and analyze what it means to be disappointed by someone.
Yeah.
Because what you're pointing out here is a guy who is playing himself out of the league. And if it wasn't for his contract, maybe we'd look at him completely differently.
And that's part of this. He's getting paid like $30-plus million. And I threw this out there just to anger up the hockey fans. He'll get paid more this year than Connor McDavid, Drew Doughty, and Sean Monahan combined.
Wow.
That's gonna
really?
that's gonna anger up the hockey.
Wow, that's crazy. You got some good stats today. This is good. I commend your research. It's good. I think to ask whether someone's disappointing, there's two things you gotta figure out first. What did you expect of them, mm-hmm. and why didn't they reach it?
Yeah.
So what did we expect of them? We expected, at the very least, if not greatness, certainly
very goodness.
Yes. Nicely
said. You know what? Kyle Lowry.
He should have been an all-star.
Yeah, should have been an all-star.
He should be an all-star.
Yeah, maybe not a starter, but should have been an all-star.
If you're drafted number one overall.
Maple Jordan was one of his nicknames.
So the expectations were pretty high. And the reason why we think he's not delivering is we think it's effort. Mm-hmm. And this is what everybody has said. Jimmy Butler may not be the most reliable source.
Nope.
He seems to, you know, he's like the Hulk. You know, he's always angry. Maybe eventually the problem is you. But everybody. Oh, geez. Thunder rolling.
Thunder is coming in.
God, this day sucks. You know what? My next meeting is at 12, so when I leave here, I got to walk around for an hour.
Yeah.
I might just go to a mall.
You know what?
I can't eat anything, though.
You can, if you want to sit here and watch Netflix, you know, I don't have to lock the door.
No. I got some errands to run, sadly. Anyway, thanks, though, Matty. You're very sweet. I think it's the motor. I think even more so than the guys not, because you look at a guy like Joe Smith. Joe Smith was drafted first overall.
Yep.
And he played for a lot of teams. He had a reasonably successful career. Marvin Williams, drafted number two out of North Carolina. People thought, wow, he's going to be great.
Nope.
He was fine. Plays for a lot of teams, moves on, right? But it's not the same as Andrew Wiggins. Because Joe Smith tried. Just wasn't that great. And he got drafted number one in a weak year. Wiggins feels like he just doesn't care enough. And that is the number one sin to a sports fan.
Steven Jackson, I think it was a year ago, went on Instagram and called out Andrew Wiggins and said he doesn't think he plays with heart. So that's player-on-player crime.
Right.
Usually we don't see that.
Almost never.
You know, when the gas bags of the world, you know, from the top ones, Skip Bayless, all the way to the thoughtful ones who work for The Athletic, that's the ranking. Skip to down to The
Skip
Athletic.
To,
when they go after an athlete, you know, we're like, we sort of, all right, that's their job to be critical of the athlete, blah, 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 whether it's fair or not is another debate. But when the player does it, and someone who's as respected as Steven Jackson, then again, it just makes you wonder. And so I sort of threw this all together. And you talk about expectations. There was rigging for Wiggins.
Right.
You know, there was all of the, like, this was a guy who was known all across North America. So that was the expectations. And to your point, why did it not work out? A lot of it has to do with heart. Defense is heart. You know, of course, it's not at all his fault. Lots of coaches, bad organizations. But if you're the number one pick, if you're supposed to be a great player, you might miss the playoffs, but you shouldn't be your career being about 100 games under 500.
Carl Anthony Towns has not had the career that people thought he might after his first year.
Yep.
He's really, really, really talented. Good. Super talented.
Yeah.
but it doesn't feel like he's put it all together. But there are glimpses mm-hmm. where you go, I see how you could build a team around this guy. And you never get that from Wiggins. You're kind of happy when he doesn't suck.
Yeah. Yes.
Right? Like when you see that he's got like 16 points and 5 rebounds, you're like, oh, he kind of tried tonight.
Yeah.
That's a really pathetic indictment of a player. And isn't it sad, like with the national program, that you'd almost hope that he would go to it so he could learn from RJ Barrett?
Yeah. Or just hang around Jamal Murray, who's like taking steps. Or even, hell, I'll hang around Tristan Thompson, who, yes, is wildly overpaid, but, you know, won a championship with LeBron.
By this point in the national team's development, Wiggins being involved should be like when Steve Nash got involved back, you know, 20-odd years ago, mm-hmm. where a dominant player comes aboard and helps the young guys to be great.
Yeah.
And this was supposed to be an indication of how far the program has moved along. I think one of the most disappointing things is you look at Canadian basketball, and he might not be the 7th or 8th most interesting player to follow now.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's so many more interesting players.
4 years ago, it would have seemed really tough that Andrew Wiggins isn't on the team. Now it's like, all right, moving on.
Right. It's kind of like missing Corey Joseph. And no insult to Corey Joseph, but he's a marginal NBA player.
Yeah.
He's pretty good.
Yeah.
He's pretty good.
He wouldn't have gotten a lot of minutes in the finals.
No, that's a great way to put it. He would have, you know, he would have logged.
He would have got you 18 to 20 minutes in the regular season. And as the playoffs went on, he
Norm Powell type numbers.
Yeah.
In terms of airtime.
Yeah. In terms of airtime. So that's sort of the thing. And I can't think of anyone.
Isn't he more disappointing than Ben?
What's that?
Isn't he more disappointing than Ben?
No, because Ben Johnson broke our heart. And I was like, so you remember, I got to look it through the eyes of I was in grade school. Right. So Ben Johnson, he won the gold. We were so happy. And then it was stripped from us. And it was like this national shame. So now to me, Ben Johnson is number one. But that was like 1988, you know, the Seoul Summer Olympics.
I'm going to disagree with you on Ben. I'm going to push back a bit.
Okay.
It was disappointing at the time because it meant so much that he won.
Yeah.
And it's the greatest title in sports, probably.
Probably.
Yes. That or heavyweight boxing champion back in the day. Not so much now, but back when Ben did
the
it.
The single greatest title you can have on planet Earth is
It's pretty cool to think we had Lennox Lewis and Donovan Bailey and Ben Johnson. Like a lot of these titles were held by Canadians.
But I think the fastest man, because it's great to be the MVP of the NBA Finals, but there's a whole lot of other countries who have nothing to do with basketball.
I
fastest
think right.
man on earth is the coolest.
It's the most global.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go with that. But everybody was cheating. Like mm-hmm. in retrospect, don't you feel like, yes, he was disappointing, but the Canadians did the Liberal Party thing, like under Paul Martin and the sponsorship scandal, where it's like, we're going to investigate ourselves. We're going to hold ourselves to a higher standard than anybody else. We're going to completely hose ourselves to prove that we're the kind of people who would do it. And everyone said, great, why don't you take yourself down? I'll just take your place.
Yeah.
So I feel like Ben was disappointing only in the sense that all major track athletes were disappointing.
But at the moment, like what? Let's say we find out 10 years from now that Andrew Wiggins had some sort of respiratory issues that didn't allow him to exert himself. Then we'll view him differently.
Very true.
But in 2009, like if we just go in the moment, Ben Johnson's more disappointing than any other Canadian athlete. In retrospect, that story has more colors and is there's a lot more shading, a lot more gray, not as much black and white.
I think that's true, but I also think that Ben Johnson raised a certain indignation too, that if we were going to hold this guy to that standard, didn't everybody have to hold their athletes to that standard too?
Oh, yeah.
And there became a little bit of a, like, why are we policing ourselves?
When Carl Lewis is running and he's holding a giant novelty syringe as he's crossing as he's crossing the finish line.
You know,
allegedly.
There's not a single reasonable, credible person connected to the track world that doesn't think that that whole line was completely juiced.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know. I totally understand the point you're making. But this is the philosophical thing I get from this. Isn't it a greater sin to not try than it is to cheat?
Is that what you're going to tell your daughter?
I don't think I should, but isn't that true in how we view it? Don't you think Ben Johnson, who gets caught for cheating, is less disappointing than Andrew Wiggins, who doesn't have enough guts to cheat?
Now we're going to, that's an interesting morality minefield. No. I'd more disappointed, that he took the steroid.
Really?
But everyone was taking. Okay.
Everybody was taking.
Everyone was taking them.
If he was the only one,
yeah,
then you could say he went above and beyond. Mm-hmm. But he literally was just keeping up with the Joneses, keeping up with the Lewises.
So really, the dumb thing for him was he got caught,
and that's it. And this is the way most people get punished: is you're stupid enough to get caught.
Mm-hmm.
It's all fine if you don't get caught. It's kind of like the financial market that way.
It's not the crime, it's the cover-up.
Totally.
Yeah.
And that's a good way to put it. So I would say that Andrew Wiggins is vastly more disappointing than Ben Johnson.
Well, that's good, because that's going to be my opening thought on the show today, that the number one most disappointing athlete is Andrew Wiggins.
Okay, great. Yeah. Well, feel free to draw from that as you see fit.
Oh, I always
shall we
steal.
Shall we get
I
into our mailbag, that. My friend?
Sure, absolutely.
Do you want to start anything?
Yeah. Dale Cadeau. Who's a fan of the show, sent in one. It's National Hot Dog Day. What should or should not go on a hot dog?
This is a great question. What should go on a hot dog is my mouth, but unfortunately, because I'm doing this diet, that's not going to happen.
Yep.
So Dale, that's not the answer you're looking for. I actually thought there's two answers, mm-hmm. and it depends whether or not you're getting one from a vendor or you're getting one from the ballpark.
Okay.
Ballpark can also be barbecue or whatever.
But the
street vendor is a specific different kind. I would argue a street vendor dog should be mustard, sauerkraut, and pickles. But outside of the vendor experience, it should just be mustard and ketchup.
Okay. I agree with your answer philosophically. That when I go to the I just put different things. But to me, the hot dog vendor, there's always so many more things. I'm just ketchup, and then I just load up on the bacon bits.
Because
I feel like I'm gaming the system. I'm getting all this extra meat. And I say meat in quotation, because I don't know what is less meat, the hot dog or the bacon bits.
That's a great point. You know, the bacon bits.
Yeah. And then you're right. With the at the ballpark or in the barbecue, I don't like a lot of stuff. And I'll say this. Like, I'll do ketchup and mustard, but usually, you know what I just do? I just do ketchup. And there is a segment of the population that will shame me for this. You know, that as a child, you put ketchup. But when you become a man, you know, you put down the milkshake, you pick up the scotch. You know, you put that, you know, like things like that. You know, we get older, and there's certain indicators. And one of them is no more ketchup. There's only going to be mustard or relish on your hot dog. And there's a certain snobbery, certain judging going on.
You make a great point about ketchup being the most infantile mm-hmm. of all the condiments.
It is. It's the sweet one. As Adam Carolla would say, it is the most num-num. It's got the most nummy in
Although
it.
Although sweet relish is sweeter, I think it's more like when you're a kid, you just goop everything on ketchup. And I think you nailed it. You're supposed to grow out of that.
Yeah.
But when you get fries and you pour ketchup all over them, which you should.
Which you should.
Do you put fries on the side, or do you put the ketchup on the fry?
I usually sprinkle it on top.
Yeah. That's the way it should be. I think people who put their condiments on the side, like, who are you fooling?
Yeah, and also,
how fancy are you?
Live a little dangerously. Put the ketchup everywhere. See what happens.
It is bad, though. Do you ever sometimes, like, put too much and you realize you got buyer's remorse afterwards because the fry gets soggy under the weight of the ketchup?
Yeah. Also, when I'm driving, I know, like, when I would go to the cottage, I knew if I was going to Weber's, which is a local burger joint on the highway 11 on the way up to the cottage. I would sometimes put on a shirt that I didn't care that I stained. Because you know me, I'm a psycho. I'm going to drive and eat because I want to get to the cottage. So those French fries, which there'd be ketchup everywhere, I knew there's ketchup that's going to be going on my shirt. Like it's inevitable. So I'd always wear some black t-shirt that would be easy to clean.
I want to throw out one thought before I move on from Dale Cadeau's very thoughtful question.
Yeah.
I don't get onions on a hot dog. Because mm-hmm. when you go to the street vendor or even at the ballpark, you'll see there's the little jar of onions with the tiny spoon.
Yeah.
It's a very unpleasant experience eating raw onions in your hot dog. It's too burny.
I think it's...
And it makes your breath smell like onions.
I think it's just, it's dudes overcompensating. I think it's the, I think the same guy that will always order the hottest sauce for his wings, you know, and proudly does it and gives you a glare when you just order medium, is the same guy who puts the onions on the hot dog. It's not a pleasant experience at all, but yet it feels like some sort of prerequisite that you need to do that.
Okay, I got a question from my buddy Ihor Junik,
yep.
who is a brilliant historian. Mm-hmm. I'm actually rereading his book, Modern... Wait, is it... geez, what's it called again? Foreign Modernism, and a study of the modernist movement in Paris of the turn of the century.
I just finished reading it. I can't believe the DA was in on the drug deal.
Don't
the whole
spoil
time.
The ending.
Oh God.
It was
spoiler,
Stravinsky.
Spoiler.
Okay, so he's also a nut when it comes to basketball, which is why I love talking to him, because he's super genius, but then turns it into an insane Raptors fan.
So I love that.
All right, so here's the question from Ihor. What should we do about this coming season? Develop prospects and hold for free agency in 2020 or 2021? Should we make another move and try to contend this year? What would that move even be? Gallo, Beal? If we could get one of those guys, we would be contenders at least to get to the Eastern Conference Final. So what should we do? Asks Ihor. Celebrity Raptor nut fan. Should we blow it up? Should we hold on? Should we try to make a move? What should we do this upcoming year?
All right. First, to get Beal, you'd have to get rid of all the talented guys.
Yeah. So well, Siakam would be gone.
Yeah. So I'm gonna say no to that.
Okay.
You know, unless it's one of those things where Washington is, but Washington's stuck with Wall. They're not gonna move. Beal's the only good thing they have. It's a dream.
I want to throw in an extra argument too. If you're Ted Leonsis and you're that front office, do you really want to get bilked by Masai Ujiri right now? After
no.
he rebuffed you?
Yeah.
Do you want to be like, if you think James Dolan was embarrassed to get ripped off by him again?
Yeah.
Imagine how Washington would feel about having Masai come and take Beal for a package that didn't really work out.
Yeah. Oh, no, you're afraid. Like, you know, now he's at the point when Masai is like Walter White. I am the one who knocks.
I just feel like we're going to get half of Oklahoma City's picks. Mm-hmm. Like him and Sam Presti got a thing going right now.
The whole draft just going to be OKC or Toronto. And it's Toronto. You know, Presti, just you and Masai, just stay on the stage. You know, no point sitting down and walking back up again.
Toronto, you're still on the clock.
God, actually, that would be hilarious if, like, just Presti just sits
in a
Barca lounger right next to Adam Silver and just like, hey, just give me the mic. I'm not walking over there again.
He gets the Morris Peterson Muskoka chair and just sits up
just
there.
Just sit there. You know where I am.
Do you remember that time I mentioned that you and your pals used to call him Muskoka Pete?
Yeah. To Mo Pete. Yeah. Yeah, that was a dumb move by you.
I realized halfway through the question that it was an insult, so I had to compensate on the fly.
Yeah, so to the people who don't know, in his final years, Mo Pete, you knew where to find him on offense. He'd be hanging around the three-point line. He didn't move very much.
No, the corner.
Yeah, the corner.
It was always the corner three.
Hey, now the analytics would have loved him, but in the mid-2000s, like, what are you doing? And so my friends, we came up with a title for him, Muskoka Pete, as in this... Just sitting in a Muskoka chair, sitting in the corner. He's not going to move. And that was our little rip job on him.
And Matt and I would laugh about this all the time.
Yeah.
Off air.
Off air. And then Mo Pete did the show. We were doing the radio show together. And Bob brought it up. And in the middle of it, you realize, oh, this is an insult. It's like, yeah, you know, you're chill and fun. Muskoka. You're a good times
just
guy.
Just relaxing.
Up
by the three-point line.
Anyway.
All right, so what do they do this year?
What do you do?
Yeah, like what's the goal
here,
going
the
in?
The goal of this year is to develop OG and Siakam. That's it. That's the only goal. So what you do is you first try, you go all out to win as many games as you can, because I believe that you accelerate the learning process if you're in a winning culture. Look at Andrew Wiggins. Not a lot of acceleration there. So you go and you try to win. And you go the honorable way where you die with dignity and try to get that three seed. Now, if suddenly you get a crazy offer for, you know, Gasol, for Kyle Lowry, for Ibaka, then you no longer die with dignity. Then you just die. So that's my answer.
All right. From Chelsea Darlington. It's set to hit almost 50 degrees Celsius with the Humidex this weekend. Will you be outside or will you be inside enjoying the wonderful, wonderful air conditioning?
I am going to be outside, but I'm going up to a cottage on Thursday morning. So I'm going to be up in Sauble Beach, my girlfriend's aunt's cottage. So for me, it's very simple. It's just when I get hot, I go sit in the water and then just flip back and forth. Thankfully, I will not be in the city this weekend, but it also, and before your answer, a little subset of this, there's very few things better than air conditioning, and it's definitely, if I did a list of the things I take for granted, I don't take a lot for granted, but air conditioning would definitely be one of them.
There's two kinds of people in the world, Matt. Hot and cold people.
Yeah.
And it's always torture when you're in a relationship and you mix the two.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're constantly fighting over the temperature of the bedroom, of the car, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I am a cold person. I wish I wasn't. Mm-hmm. I wish I was one of these people that opened up like a flower when it got real hot. But you know what? I like it cold.
Yeah.
When it's minus 20, it doesn't bug me that much. My daughter said to me the other day, "You're a polar bear, Dad. Get in the water," because the water was really cool. And I thought, you know what, honey? You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
I'm going to be a polar bear. It's what I am. That said, though, when it gets to 50, I feel like it's my obligation to be outside because I like things that are crazy.
Okay.
I like the extremes.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to experience the extremes just to understand the threshold of life. So, Chelsea, to answer your question, I'm going to try to be outside for as long as I can, up to the point where I'll go past discomfort, but I'll tap out before it gets to dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
I won't jog or anything like that.
Yeah.
You know, but I will try to be outside so that at the end of the day, I'll go, 50 degrees Celsius.
Do you have air conditioning?
I do.
Okay. So that's the key, is you can go out, because at least mentally, I can go out and fully embrace discomfort. Because at the end of the day, I know I can scurry back into my bourgeois lifestyle with my air conditioning.
Well, it's not like the European heat waves where it's crazy hot for weeks on end. And they don't, and they don't believe in AC. Like, I don't want to make it sound.
Yeah.
You know, to me, it's more like jumping out of a plane with a parachute,
mm-hmm.
like skydiving. I just want to say I did something crazy and then, you know, tuck it away in my memory banks.
But it is a good point. It is fascinating. I remember when I was in Arizona and they were going through a heat wave in Arizona. Because an Arizona heat wave is a lot hotter than one in Maine. And it was fascinating. Like when you put your hand out the window while driving, it felt like someone took a hairdryer and put it right next to your hand and put it on full blast. Like, it was a very weird sensation, just what the body was going through.
Is that the craziest weather experience you've ever had?
Ooh, craziest weather experience.
For me, while you're thinking, February, Winnipeg, minus 44, had to take a 15-minute walk, literally wore two pairs of long johns, a coat under my coat. It was so cold. It was crazy. Even as a polar bear, I think you have to have limits.
Yeah.
But it was so cold. It was fascinating.
Yeah.
I was it felt like I was on Hoth. And I kept expecting to see Luke wrapped up in the innards of a Tauntaun.
I thought it smelled bad on the outside.
Nice.
Yes.
Do you have an answer or do you want me to move on to the next question?
My favorite one was 2 years ago. It was like 2 or 3 years ago, New Year's, where it was the coldest New Year's like on record in Ontario. I was up at a cottage, so it was even colder. But what I did during the day, because they said once night hits, you have to be inside, I built a giant fire. Like, I got it all started. So, and then, you know, got it lit an hour before sunset. I kept that puppy going. I felt like Kurt Russell in It. It's like, I know we're going to die, but I'm going to keep this fire going and swigging back. Well, it wasn't whiskey.
I was going to say, I think this is the manliest thing you've ever said.
Oh, it was great. I kept the fire going until late in the night. Now, let me balance it by saying I was drinking a delicious Grand Cru Chardonnay from Corton, but I did keep that fire going.
Quick sidebar. Did you see your Instagram account today?
I didn't.
Yeah, my onslaught of attacks has begun again. I got pretty personal on this last one. All right, Kim Alexander writes in, what, if any, movies are you looking forward to seeing this summer?
Quentin Tarantino.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Oh, can't wait to see that.
What really jumped out at me is it's the first time outside of the horror genre I can remember being excited about a movie mm-hmm. that didn't have a superhero in it.
Oh, interesting. Huh. That's a good point. Because all the movies you really usually get excited about, there's the superhero element is absolutely there, whether it's...
Or the horror ones.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the horror ones, like Jordan Peele, like I was excited to go see Us, which I never actually did. But I was excited to go see it, though.
Yeah,
I just got busy.
It I really enjoyed it, but a lot of people I respect were like, it's not as good, and just critics don't want to say bad things because you don't want to be the uncool guy
right.
that doesn't like Jordan
Peele. Well, everybody's loving his stuff right now, so you kind of want to just keep it going.
Yeah.
Ari Aster's Midsommar, however you bloody well pronounce it, I don't know.
Sure.
But that looks good because I thought Hereditary was pretty spectacular.
Ooh, yeah. The crazy thing about that movie is most of the horror happens during the day.
I never noticed that. That's a really interesting point.
I read about it. I'm like, oh, wow. Because you never get that. Like, I want to see that.
Now, there's a couple night scenes, but there is an uncommonly large amount of daytime horror. It's
can you pull off scary in the middle of the day? I mean, they did it in Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Jaws.
There you go. Jaws. But yeah, the new movie by the Hereditary individual, absolutely. And then Once Upon a Time.
You know what's interesting about Quentin Tarantino is he's such a brand now that he can market his stuff the ninth film by Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
Like, who gives a shit, really? Yeah. Like, do you think Martin Scorsese is like, and here's my new movie, Silence, the 47th movie by Martin Scorsese. But he's such a almost cartoonish character in and of himself.
Yeah.
He's pretty easy to like, though. He's kind of like our Woody Allen in the sense that he's a filmmaker that transcended being just a filmmaker.
Oh, yeah. Absolute auteur. Where you always could tell a Woody Allen movie, just like you could always tell a Quentin Tarantino movie. And a lot of times it's just by, in the first 12 seconds, the fonts that are used, the title cards, things like that. You immediately know who it is. By the way, he says he's going to retire after 10 movies, and his 10th movie might be an R-rated version of Star Trek. And I'm going to say this right now. Government needs to do something to force him to keep making movies. I'm sorry. Like, I don't want to live in a world where every year or so there's not a Quentin Tarantino movie. Like, he should be forced. You got to make movies.
If he actually lived up to doing just 10, I think I'd respect it because I'm a contrarian.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, I'd feel bad. Although his last couple of movies haven't been that great. But
I love The Hateful Eight.
Really?
I did. Once you rewatch it and view it as a comedy, and it's a completely different movie.
Okay. That's good advice. I'll try that.
Yeah.
I really didn't like Django very much.
Really?
I thought that was pretty.
Oh my God, Django was overrated. Like the bar scene, with Christoph Waltz. Like,
yeah, I mean, he's always good, but even like the
scene, movie took a dip after Christoph Waltz died. It took a bit of a dip for me, but I loved Django.
The last third was kind of, I don't know. Anyway, next up, do you got any famous people questions? We heard from my famous friend Ihor.
Yeah, well, Sean Fitzgerald was like, ooh, I can't think of a question, and everyone else is on vacation. Because all the famous people I know, they've all left. Oh. They've all left for vacation.
They don't have phones?
Well, they're not answering their phones. So
la-di-da.
I know. Well, think about how many people worked for like 60 straight days, the Raptors and stuff.
You know who else has to work all the time? Mm. Everybody.
Larry Murphy's Law writes in, it's Nick Frost, who's can be a funny follow. If Bob needed to buy you a present, what year and make would the wine be? Let's see how much he knows you after all these years.
I can't think of a make because you never give me specifics. I will give you the same advice that you always give me. Mm-hmm. Try something from Portugal.
I never tell you that advice.
You always do that. You're like, try something. Oh, you know what's a nice grape? The Rueda.
I did that once.
Was in the last Rioja.
No, it was Verdejo's the grape. The region is Rueda. And the thing about Portugal is good for if you want to try to find good wines that are inexpensive. However, as a winemaking region, Portugal is not in my top five. I love port, obviously. I'm not a maniac. However, if I'm going to do wines, you know, it's going to be France first, Italy a close second. Third becomes tough. Do I go Germany, Spain, or the United States? Oh, okay. We won't do that. We'll save that for another podcast. So, but no, that'd be a hard question. The right answer, Burgundy. Give it, you know, give it again with a couple years of age on it.
If I may, I will give the answer to the year that I always give for this question, and I'll go back to Bill and Ted for this. 69.
Ah,
the answer is always 69.
That's right. That's when two people orally stimulate one another simultaneously.
Or the 68. I'll owe you one later.
I've never heard that before.
Well, there you go.
That's a horrible joke.
You think so?
I didn't mean I didn't like it.
Ooh, okay.
You know what I do like?
What?
I like our lawyer, Jeff Pollock. He's trying to get you to come out. Me and Jeff Pollock have hung out a little bit. I'll keep this simple. If you need a lawyer, he's a great one. And he's very accessible. And if he's your lawyer, then you don't have to worry about legal things again. And it's fantastic. I literally never have to worry about it again. It's one of the only things of actual adult responsibility that I've done is have Jeff Pollock as my lawyer. If you want to get a hold of him, jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G. jeffpollock.com, 416-777-0088. What's that number? Glad you asked. 416-777-0088. You get him. He's your lawyer. Then you move on with that for the rest of your life.
All right, so the summer edition of the mailbag continues with two questions, one perfect for me and one perfect for you, both by Tristan Fitzpatrick. Ooh. Which one would you like first, the me one or the you one?
Well, let's go with you first.
Okay.
Age before beauty.
Nice. Oh, snap. If you could really sell your soul to the devil, what would you sell it for?
Ooh.
Now, I'm going to answer this.
Yeah.
If you really could, I wouldn't. Because I've seen enough stories about how this turns out that I would know better.
Yeah.
That said, what would I want more than anything else in the entire world?
Mm.
I think I would probably want to create something like Abbey Road, but not have the other three Beatles.
Okay. Just
like
you.
I would like I kind of like the Paul McCartney thing where in his mind it really was just all him.
Yeah.
I would like to create something so great that everyone in the universe acknowledges, damn, that's good. Like the 11th film by Bob Mackiewicz.
Yeah. Okay. That's good.
That's not a noble answer, but if I'm honest with you, I just want to make something so good that it'll live forever.
Now, I can't pick like time travel and the ability to live forever, right?
Well, I guess you could. Why not?
Okay. Time travel and the ability to live forever.
Okay.
Bada bing, bada bang. Now, if it was going to be...
That's funny. We both went live forever, but you picked you and I picked a book.
Yeah.
I think you, once again, Matt, much smarter
you know,
than I am.
I'd also, you know... Yeah, that's what I would pick.
Okay, so here, this is a follow-up, and I'll toss it right to you because it's perfect for you. From Tristan Fitzpatrick, you start reading a book recommended by a friend only to discover it's the story of your life. You read up to the present. Do you continue to read?
Oh, my God.
What a question.
By the way, shout out to Tristan Fitzpatrick. He's doing some great work on News Talk 1010. Radio game, man. It's tough.
Oh, so he counts as a famous friend then?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, great. Absolutely.
I haven't listened to RB in a while.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jim Richards.
Richards. That guy.
Hack.
Hack. I'm more of a John Moore guy. By the way, that's how crazy Raptors got in this city. I was on as a guest on the John Moore show a bunch of time talking about the Raptors.
That's so funny.
I know. And then when Kawhi left, I was on again. So, and I was on one. Ooh. Okay, we'll get to this. How good a line was this? So Vlad Guerrero Jr. was brought on to talk about the home run derby, and I'm sure I ripped this off. He won the popular vote but lost the electoral because someone else won the home run derby, but he had the most home runs.
That sidebar was just to get to that line?
Yeah, it was. I don't feel good about it either. Wow. So
have some of your coffee, Matt. It's good.
No. I think I'd rather just have the hot chocolate dust. And by the way... ain't fancy stuff. It's the no frills hot chocolate.
When I was in university, I used to do that. I used to call it instant coffee, and I'd take a spoonful of coffee grounds and put it in my mouth, and then just drink some hot water.
Jesus, that's disgusting.
It's like the speedball version of coffee. And then I'd be up for basically 2 days writing because I was about a week behind.
Yeah. Would I continue to read?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Really?
No. No, I wouldn't, because I don't want to know what my eventual demise would be, because then my entire life would be trying to find a way to avoid it. And I like the surprise. You know what it is? It goes to my favorite expression from The Simpsons. To the greatest moment of all, better than the deed, better than the memory, the moment of anticipation. Because I've been fairly blessed and lucky, and I have a good life and a lot going on, it means I get to live in a world where anticipation is something positive. If you have a bad life or a tough life or if you're going through a tough stretch, and I know eventually I will with health and things like that, but at least as of right now, I enjoy the anticipation because the odds are what's going to happen next at worst will be neutral, at best will be great. So no, I don't want to keep reading. I want the anticipation. And I feel if I know, I would screw everything up in some sort of time loop issue.
I would keep reading because I want to know who to be mad at now.
Can I just do a Biff Tannen and
Biff Tannen?
Biff Tannen and just find out who wins, who wins the
Sports Almanac from
Back to the Future 2. Part 2. Right. I just want to know who wins the Open Championship because then I can tweet out who I think will win and I'll throw in the cold takes hashtag on Twitter and then I'll be right and I'll be a hero and I'll make lots of money.
No, that's... That also sounds like an answer to Tristan's first question about what you would sell your soul for.
Yeah.
That almanac. All right, here's a question from not much known about hockey, dear friend of the pod, Jeff Merrick.
Nice.
Can you discuss what it was like to work on OTR during wrestling shows while TSN was a partner of the company?
Mm-hmm.
And was it true Carl DeMarco tried to get you, meaning me, to ask Vince McMahon about grandkids during the post-Owen OTRs?
Yes. Yes, 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 yes.
Do you want to answer what it was like working on those wrestling shows before I
Okay, here's some of my favorite memories. The Hulk Hogan two-parter. I wasn't in the control room. I was doing other stuff. But I could distinctly, and so I was on the floor where the interview was going on, but I could distinctly hear Jeff Merrick saying over and over again, he's lying. That's a lie. That's a lie. Michael, no. And then just Jeff constantly feeding Michael. And Michael, like, I felt bad for Michael because he's got Hulk Hogan there. All of wrestling is watching and executives are there. And in his ear, all he hears is Jeff Merrick going, he's lying. He's a liar. Hogan's a liar. That's my first memory from all those wrestling shows.
So I will tell you exactly the flow chart for those shows.
Yeah.
We would book somebody. Mm-hmm. I would phone Merrick and set aside an hour.
Yeah.
And Merrick would just download information for an hour. Mm-hmm. I would ask questions and the answers would be long and bursting at the seams with information.
Yep.
And I would write everything down and then I would look at it and I would say, okay, how do we distill this into a half an hour? What's the most important stuff? And what can Landsberg remember? Mm-hmm. Because Landsberg, to his credit, eventually learned a bit about wrestling just from talking about everyone. But for like the first year, like I don't know if he'd ever even seen it before. The first time we interviewed Vince, like I don't think he really knew who he was. Like I'm sure he'd heard of him, but
I didn't know. And then there was the time he
it could have been like one of the guys from Dragon's Den or something, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And the ripping of the shirt.
The ripping of the shirt, whose idea was that?
That was your idea.
Thank you kindly, sir.
Boy, howdy, was that a bad idea by you?
Oh, that was a great idea. We played that clip like 60 times. What's with you, you? Anyway.
When you watch it now at the end, it's creepy.
Okay, but you know what, though? Like
It was memorable.
You look for moments. It was memeable.
It was.
It would be a meme today.
There was maybe we didn't know what a meme was.
We should find it and meme it and then use it at 10:50 whenever Landsberg makes a point or gets shredded in an argument and does something dumb. Stone Cold ripping off his shirt.
I'm going to give that to Carlo. But yeah, you could always
Did you ever notice that Landsberg shaved his chest though? If you look back at it, like he shaves his chest.
That's a good point. I'm going to bring that. I'm going to be working with him a little bit. I'm going to bring that up.
Okay, so let me tell you the story about why Merrick there is referencing grandkids. So Owen Hart dies in the ring, and we get asked to come down to Stamford to interview Vince, and it's pretty intense. He hasn't really talked publicly.
Yeah.
And we had a really strange relationship with that company. Like, we were a Canadian show, but we were like sort of the only mainstream show pretty much in the world that took wrestling seriously.
And you should put this in context. This was the late 90s, early 2000s.
Right.
Very different.
Right. And it was hugely popular, but it was really before the internet had taken off and things like Dave Meltzer's newsletter were still like where the smarts all went for their information, or Jeffy's program, The Law. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't like the same availability of information that there is today. So we were one of the key places where they would disseminate messages. Maybe they thought we were the most useless at interviewing so they could control us better. I suspect that was probably true. Merrick and Meltzer would have been too smart. But we got down there and Carl DeMarco, who was running the WWF Canada at the time, was with us and he was very nervous because we kind of represented his territory.
Yeah.
And this was such a volatile topic. So Shane McMahon, who was very intelligent, but clearly testy. He had a real chip on his shoulder the whole time.
Yeah.
So we're all in the control room and we're throwing out questions to Vince. And Carl says, ask him about grandkids. And Shane indignantly looks at Carl and says, they're not going to fucking ask him about grandkids.
Good, by the way, good for Shane for recognizing, come on, Carl, there's softballs and then there's...
Right, and then there's, exactly, like that's a watermelon that you're lobbing from about 15 feet away.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, I forgot about that story. Ask about his grandchildren.
But it became kind of code behind the OTR scenes for whenever you were asking an awful question, it was... And I give Carl credit, actually, because he was the president of the company at the time when it exploded.
Yeah.
So here he was that had a, you know, he had a job that was kind of weird and marginal in the entertainment industry. And all of a sudden he was in charge of the hottest property in the country.
Yeah.
Must've been very strange.
It must've been. I love the wrestling shows because A, I I thought we always did them really well, and a lot of it was you and Merrick was, you know, the first.
Well,
guy.
Merrick was the brains.
Merrick was the brains,
and I was the and I was the editorial filter.
Yeah, yeah, and then Michael, as he started doing more and more of them, got really good at the wrestling interviews. The replays of those would get higher ratings. Would also get massive Bafo ratings. Most of the wrestlers were great guests. They knew how to work the mic, which was better than a junior hockey player. And at one point, I did get to sit down with Jimmy Mouth of the South and Bobby the Brain Heenan, which was an absolute thrill for me to be able to hang out with those guys.
Who was your favorite wrestler that you got to meet?
Oh, it was them. Because for me, it wasn't the wrestlers. It was the managers.
Right, because they're so colorful.
Yeah, I love Bobby the Brain, and Jimmy couldn't have been nicer. And he always got a kick out of it because I have a twin brother, my twin brother Josh. Josh always rooted for the good guys. I always rooted for the bad guys. So I was the one at Maple Leaf Gardens rooting for Jim the Anvil Neidhart and Bret Hart, you know, being managed by Mouth of the South. So for me, I always rooted for those guys.
With the megaphone.
With a megaphone.
Which somehow, mysteriously, would be incorporated into every match as someone got conked on the back of the head.
Megaphones and attaché cases, Bob. The two keys to being a wrestling manager.
I haven't watched a ton of wrestling lately, but I hope that the foreign object, or as my dear pal Merrick likes to call it, the international object. I hope it's still utilized.
Yeah.
With the same panache that it once was.
Yeah.
I once staged a WrestleMania in my high school, mm-hmm. which in retrospect would have been so litigious mm-hmm. that if you even dared to think it in high school today, yeah. you would be suspended.
Yeah.
Like we were giving each other real pile drivers and real suplexes. And it was in the gym at lunchtime. And it was me and my friend, James Cushney, who we wrestled as the Flying Ukrainians. And he was Crazy James Kapusta. It was Crazy James Kapusta, and I was Bob the Flying Holopchi Makowitz.
Yeah.
And I actually had a coil of kibasa
yeah.
that I hid inside my trunks and brought out and used as a hammer on someone.
Oh, God, that would have been
against
hilarious.
Against Sadistic Steve Hennessy and Dr. Death Diego Fuentes, who eventually went on to be on Much Music.
There you go.
There you go.
That would have been a great tag team. Jim Ross should have covered that match.
We really
yeah.
suplexed each other.
Yeah.
But we didn't know how.
Yeah,
so we were really crashing from that height. How my neck isn't snapped, I'll never know. But in retrospect,
yeah.
awful idea.
The teachers were in the lounge smoking.
No teachers. They were like, do what you want.
Yeah, exactly.
They were like the counselors at Camp Crystal Lake.
Yep. That didn't end well for them. I should mention before we go that this show is, one of our sponsors is Seat Giant, a Canadian partner with us. They guarantee every ticket to be legitimate and stand behind the customer experience. So if you're going to buy a concert ticket, sporting event ticket, everything and anything in North America, I bought my tickets for a bunch of the Just for Laughs show I did through Seat Giant. Then a discount code, you put in Bob and Matt at checkout, you get a cut, we get a cut, everyone wins.
Let me throw out one last question from a famous friend, Michael Landsberg.
Yep.
Zach Smith wrote a sweet letter to the Sens and their fans. Does Kawhi owe Raps fans the same? And if so, why?
Mm-hmm.
We'll wrap up on this.
Yeah.
What do you think? Does Kawhi owe anybody a letter?
No. If it's by that, he owes a private letter, I think, to the Raptors medical staff and coaching staff for taking him at a time when there was a lot of people that didn't trust, you know, and questioned his heart. And they did everything right by him. Now, he did everything right as well, but it's a two-way streak. He certainly owes that organization a letter. Does he technically owe the fans? No. Should he? Yes. And what the hell is he waiting for?
He does owe the fans a letter, and let me explain why.
Do it.
How many games did he play?
60.
How many games could he have played? 70 plus?
Yeah.
So he took about an eighth of the season off.
Yeah.
Just to rest.
Yeah.
And they were very vocal about it. Did the season's ticket holders who were at games where they played live in Toronto get their money back because Kawhi was resting?
No.
Right. But everybody understood because it was the best thing for him and the best for the franchise overall.
Yep.
It was a calculated move. But if I'm the athlete and I'm saying to the fans, I'm going to cruise through about somewhere between 15-20% of the season to rest up, to make sure I'm in good position to do my best.
Mm-hmm.
I think I should thank the fan base for going with me on that journey.
Yep.
You know, like...
That's a good answer.
And the whole rest load management thing,
mm-hmm.
it drove you and I nuts. In the end, it worked.
Yeah.
It was the smart thing to do.
Smart thing.
But let's not forget, not everybody enjoyed it while it was happening. Because as to start the thing way back to the Andrew Wiggins, the number one sin in sports is to look like you're not trying.
Yeah.
People wouldn't accuse Kawhi of not trying, but he was getting special treatment.
Yes.
And everybody was open about it. So at least he could say thank you to the fans. I busted my ass when I played to deliver a championship, which we did. You supported me through the whole journey, which was unconventional, but meaningful for both sides. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
To play it this way is to be a total mercenary.
Yeah.
And I think it does leave me with a bit of a bad taste in my mouth.
I just wonder, what's the delay? I mean,
must be the not giving a shit.
Yeah, could be that.
You think it could be that?
Do you think he's waiting for the regular season, the Clippers' first game in Toronto?
It reminds me a little bit of the Steve Martin line from the Oscars when he goes, you know, marriages in Hollywood rarely last because we sleep with so many people. I think that he's somewhere on, you know, he's doing the Alan Rickman on a beach, yeah, making 20%.
Yeah. Oh, perfect way to end it, Bob. Bob, this has been a lot of fun. We'll do this hopefully early next week because much like you, there's summer plans going on.
Yeah. I almost wish this sucked. It was so much fun, but I wish it sucked so I could stay mad. But now, yeah, I got to, like, you know, now it's like having to accept someone's apology. Like, what's fucking fun about that?
Yeah. Goodbye, Bob.
Bye, Matt. Ch-ch-ch-ca.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.